Happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, really pleased to welcome Steve Betchkal of Eau Claire, Wisconsin, author of All of This and Robins Too, a guide to the 50 or so best places to find birds in Wisconsin. We're going to be talking with him about birds and birders. He's got some top 10 lists, and I know that's going to be a lot of fun. And it's always fun to hear from Jim Packard, who's joining us. This is our membership drive, our winter membership drive. We're here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Listener donations, as you well know, are the foundation of our budget, and that's why we are asking for your gift right now. So make your pledge of support at WPR.org or toll free at 888-202-2552. Jim, good morning. What have we got for a goal today?
Well, Larry, we've got a goal of $9,000 to raise by 12:30, and meeting the goal will help make the program continue in the months to come. So your contribution of $60, $120, any amount that you choose will help us get there. Make your pledge now online at WPR.org or call us toll-free at 888-202-2552.
You know, in just a minute or two, we'll be talking with Steve Betchkal about birds and birders. He's a great guy. He's a lively guy, knows a lot about birds. And, you know, he's just an example, I think, of the interesting guests that you have an opportunity to hear on our program 5 days a week. Think about how much you enjoy the kinds of programs that we have from 11 to 12:30, maybe how it enriches your life, and then make your contribution to support it. And you can do it at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Jim, we have an incentive, too.
Indeed, we do. You know, you give to WPR to support the programs like Larry Mueller's programs. But as an added incentive for your good deed, we have a special thank you for this hour and a half. You donate $120 or more, and you'll receive the book All of This and Robins Too by Steve Betchkal. It is a great book. Steve has been chasing birds for some 40 years, and he's uncovered what he thinks are the best places in Wisconsin to find birds, and in a very folksy narrative way has given you specific directions. I mean, right down to the intersections of where you're going to find birds. So donate $120 or more. You'll get All of This and Robins Too by Steve Betchkal, and that's at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
He has the Hot to Trot 100 in his book, among other things. So it's a great book, and I hope you'll call in with your contribution. You know, the Ideas Network is unique in the country. There are very few places that have a network dedicated to homegrown call-in shows. And you might have found yourself hovering around the radio and drawn into maybe a great discussion. You might be doing that, matter of fact, today. I tell you what, I really appreciate the knowledge of the guests that we have. And I know that you appreciate our guests' knowledge as well. So show your pride in our guests. Show your pride in Wisconsin Public Radio. And call in right now with a contribution at 888-202-2552. And you can also donate at WPR.org.
And for your pledge of $120 or more, you'll also receive the WPR member card. It's a card that gives you 2-for-1 discounts at more than 200 participating restaurants, 52 B&Bs, and 52 cultural attractions. The member card is a year-long reminder of how grateful we are for your support. We couldn't produce great radio without your donation, so we're happy to send you the member card as our way of saying thanks. Give now $120 or more. You'll also receive Steve's book and receive the member card. You can do that securely online at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, I haven't mentioned that Wisconsin Public Radio member card during this entire drive. I'm glad you brought that up, Jim, because it's a wonderful opportunity to get 2-for-1 dining. In particular, I've more than paid for my card every single year with the 2-for-1 dining that I've had in not only, I live in Madison, not only in Madison, but in other places around the state. So it's a wonderful opportunity for a $120 contribution or more. You decide really how much you want to give. If you contribute $120 or more, we're going to send you that member benefit card and Steve Betchkal's book as well. And if you contribute $1,200, we'll put you online to the Festa Minona as well, which we'll talk more about later. But I tell you what, the tickets are going fast, Jim. There's not a lot left.
Indeed. People are excited about this, and they're beginning to jump on board.
Get on the gondola. Gondola, I guess is what we should call it. Get on the gondola. Oh, boy. Well, with a $1,200 contribution. But whatever the amount, contribute now if you can. 888-202-2552 or go online to WPR.org. Well, let's talk with Steve Bechkal of Eau Claire. He is the author of this book we've been talking about, All of This and Robins Too, A Guide to the 50 or So Best Places to Find Birds in Wisconsin. And it's about as entertaining a book as you're going to read. Steve, welcome back.
Hi, Larry. I'm calling in to see if I can get a hold of one of those copies of one of those of that book you're describing. It sounds great.
It's a fantastic book, Steve. You ever get a chance to read it?
Seriously, thanks for inviting me.
Oh, it's great. Thank you for being with us. I want to give the number for people to call in with questions as we talk about birds and birders. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org, and we'll be glad to get you on the air. You know, you're a list guy, aren't you?
Yeah, you'll hear birders refer to themselves as listers, and I am a lister, Larry, and proud of it. In fact, I say the same thing about tree hugging, by the way.
Well, what separates those who keep lists from those who don't?
Well, some would say obsessive compulsive disorder. My wife, Peach Ponish of Manitowoc fears I'm obsessive compulsive, and my dear wife, who is a special ed teacher, says I walk a fine line, but I'm all about balance in all things. When we talk about bird watchers, what we're talking about is keeping lists of the birds you see. Bird watchers keep track of all that kind of data, and we call them listers because they have things like life lists or they have state lists. They keep lists of birds they see in their yard or in a county, and so that's what it means. It does not mean to lean heavily to one side or the other. We're clear on that.
Well, what are the have you got a list about the top 10 things we ought to know about birders?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's very informative because if you're not aware of these things, you might be caught by surprise. So the top 10 things you should know about birders, number 10 is the word ornithology translates literally into, quote, what's your life list? Fact number 9 is, yes, it is contagious, and there's no known cure but getting out before sunrise. Reason number 8, a top 10 thing, number 8 is, you know how to tell the difference between a serious birder from an amateur, Larry?
No.
By the tallies on the pith helmet. Number 7, one house sparrow, two house sparrows, 950 house sparrows. Number 6, yes, honey, I am listening, but is that a northern periole on that silver maple? Number 5, no, the binoculars are not removable. They're grafted on. Fact number 4, some of my best friends are botanists. Reason number 3, my corvid is smarter than your honor roll student.
Oh, man.
Type of jay or crow for explanation. And number 2, did you know that the most popular names for children of birders are Roger Torrey, David Sibley, Phoebe, and bobolink, but rarely ever ground dove, nutcracker, or grosbeak? And the top thing you should know about birders, friends don't let friends bird and drive.
Oh, man. Well, I tell you, how long did it take you to come up with that list?
I'm a very slow and meticulous writer, a lot of editing and a lot of perusal by friends and family telling me, no, don't say that on the air, Steve.
Well, let me give the number again, 1-800-642-1234, the number to call. What are you seeing in the Eau Claire area? Anything new and exciting in birding up there?
Spring is breaking.
Yeah.
You know that by the calendar, spring is scheduled for March 21st, but actually it occurs a lot faster than that. We're seeing horned larks coming in, and we're hearing cardinal song, and titmice are singing, and house finches are breaking the song. There are reports of great horned owls with young already in the nest, and around here we have bald eagles on the nest already. So spring is on the way. Hang in there.
Tell us now about a little about your book here. I've really enjoyed reading it, but give our listeners a description of what they're going to find in the book.
Well, many times birdwatchers want to know where to go to find good wildlife watching spots. And Wisconsin's a big state, and fortunately we do have a lot of good habitat, but I think it helps to narrow the priorities. And so what I've done is ranked 50 spots that you can go to see birds. They're not only good for birds, they're beautiful spots in a lot of cases for seeing forests or prairie and other wildlife as well, dragonflies and butterflies, wildflowers. But what I've done is I've kind of re-engineered a guide for the state of Wisconsin that gets you to these places. And what I've tried to do is make it not only useful as a resource that way, but entertaining. So I've tried to put some humor into it.
Oh, you've sure done that. And you know, you also talk about the birds that you've seen in those areas, too, in the specific areas, because you wouldn't have seen all the birds in all the areas.
No, these spots have specialties, what I call a short list, appropriately. Some of the top 10 birds that you might find regularly at a spot that are birds that people seek out and are exceptional species to find anywhere.
How many species of birds would we have we observed in Wisconsin or have been observed in Wisconsin?
Well, right now, the official record is over 430 right now. So we add one or two a year, and that means a bird will be blown over from the Rockies on the prevailing westerlies, or something will wander in because the hurricane blows them off course. And so you get some oddballs, but because of the number of eyes out there, people are spotting new things all the time.
Yeah, and as I think you point out in your book, there's not everybody, well, there's no one who has probably seen all 400 or so species.
Well,
I hear at least here in Wisconsin. Or is there one?
One who's seen 400 some, yes. Daryl Hessen has.
Oh, Daryl.
He's been going at it a long time, and he has seen over 400, but that's, as far as I know, he's the only person who has.
Wow. Well, I've seen over 400 house sparrows on my feeders.
that's not so tough to do. In fact, I can recommend a spot for that if you like later.
Steve Vetchkal, our guest here, as we talk about birds and birding. And if you have a bird question for him, maybe there's something you've seen, you're not sure quite what it is, or maybe you've got a question about a particular area of the state, because Steve certainly has not limited himself to one little small area. He gets around the state here a bit. So if you have a question along those lines, too, we'd welcome your call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm laughing here because I'm thinking about the different lists that you have. What are the top 10 or so best places to grab a bite between warbler waves?
Oh, yeah. You know, in a nod to the Great Wisconsin Birding and Nature Trail, you know that economics and environmentalism do mix, in fact, and so a lot of people have understood that if you attract birders, you get business at your restaurant or at your hotel. And so I have found and had suggestions from folks, too, that, you know, if you go around the state, there are great places to get a bite to eat. And I'll give you some examples. For example, following a brisk morning of 2,500 birds at Meade Wildlife Area, one of my favorite places to eat in Wausau is at the 2510 restaurant.
Ah.
If you, after your bird fix at the Cook Arboretum in Janesville, you can swing by Beloit for homemade soup and sandwiches at Denali's. Mm-hmm. Upon returning from Dunnville Bottoms in Dunn County, one can visit the Creamery in Downsville or choose Mike's Smokehouse, the Nelson Cheese Factory, or Mona Lisa's in my hometown, Eau Claire. And while birding in Schwamigan Bay, you could try one of Ryan Brady's favorite eateries, Maggie's up in Bayfield. Comes highly recommended.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone along the upper Lake Michigan shoreline knows what a fish lunch is, of course. After a turn about the Manitowoc Impoundment or Woodland Dunes Nature Center, you can sample fresh perch at Phil Rohr's or the KC Club, or select the homemade fare at the M&M lunch in lovely Two Rivers. And after birding the Nine Springs sewage treatment ponds in Madison, that'll work your appetite up. Treat yourself to Himal Chuli on State Street or any number of ethnic eateries. Or stock up on a picnic lunch from the Willie Street Co-op. You must have tried that, I'm sure.
Oh, yes, I have. And I've tried many of the restaurants you've mentioned, but a few I haven't. But I'm going to try them out, Steve. I am going to. And those are in your book, by the way, too.
No, most of these are not.
No?
I have a couple more quickly. I'm just going to say, as a special offer, I have another offer of my own to all your listeners, Larry. Anybody who shows up during the next half hour at the China Buffet on Green Bay's east side wearing binoculars, a balaclava, and Blaze Orange, while toting a copy of All of This and Robbins 2, will be treated to lunch by Ty and Ida Bauman of the Bay Beach Wildlife Sanctuary.
Well, I tell you what, Steve, there may be some, well, if they have to conform to all of the specifics, it might it might be a little bit of a problem. Steve Betchkal, our guest today, as we talk birds and birding here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest today is Steve Betchkal of Eau Claire, author of the book All of This and Robbins 2, A Guide to the 50 or So Best Places to Find Birds in Wisconsin. Contribute $120 or more during our pledge drive here, and we'll send you a copy of the book at that number is 888-202-2552. And we've got lots of copies here, and get yours. Make a contribution, get yours, $120 or more. Well, we have callers online too, Steve, so I want to get some of those folks involved here. By the way, if you have a question for Steve or comment, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. And let's go to Daniel in Wisconsin Rapids. Daniel, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I've just got a couple of questions. I'm living in central Wisconsin. I live in a rural area, essentially out in the woods. And they're ubiquitous owls, and I'm not sure. I think they're either barred owls or gray owls, and you can hear conversations going on among different parts of the woods with their vocalizations that evening, and I'm just wondering, and maybe I can, if I can try to mimic the vocalization. It's just sort of that classic owlish hoot. It's a any ideas what if that would be a gray owl or a barred owl?
Yeah, Daniel, ubiquitous owls, that's a wonderful thing to have. I have experienced that a lot. And so let me just clarify this. Now, the one we say the barred owl expresses itself as who cooks for you, who cooks for you all. So it goes, hoo, 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 hoo. That's one. Or are you hearing the great horned owl, which goes, which one do you think it is?
I think it's the first. I think it's the barred owl.
Barred owl. All right. That probably answers your question. There are a lot of good bird recordings out there to kind of clarify that, and if you want to learn that one and a lot more to differentiate, you can pick one of those up. One is John Feith's album. He has a lot of good bird songs on that. He's a Madison resident, puts out a great CD.
Yeah, he does.
If I might, I just one other question, just sort of about general raptor identification. Out, we've got all kinds of raptors out in this central Wisconsin grasslands, but boy, I sure find it difficult to distinguish one from another when they're in flight, and even when they're not. I know there are a lot of them. Can you give just kind of any general tips on marshland or grassland raptor identification?
Sure. Let's start with this. The red-tailed hawk is the most common hawk. Let's say that unless proven innocent, it's probably a red-tailed hawk.
That's sort of a principle I go by.
Yeah. In the wintertime, rough-legged hawks come into grasslands. And so if the snow is a foot or so in depth or less, they may be in the area. And so they come down from up north, and they have a little different pattern. A good bird guide will help you distinguish the patternization of these birds, their undersides and their tails and things like that. Those two are most likely. A northern harrier is another bird that flies low over marsh and grassland. So the big hawks, those three are probably most likely.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Daniel, for calling. Appreciate your call. He's a lucky guy to have access to those owls and those raptors.
Yeah, stereophonic owls. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's take some more calls here at 800-642-1234. We turn to David in Mondovi. Hi, David.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a quick question. I've got a number of sparrowhawks, American kestrels, flying around my place. I've got a large horse pasture, and I've got a telephone post that I don't have any use for. I was wondering if I could put a telephone post up and a platform on the top, and if so, what kind of a structure would I make to maybe make a nesting site for these things?
Well, they are cavity nesters. A structure on the top, a platform, would not work. You'd need a kind of what your traditional birdhouse with a box birdhouse with a hole in it. and it will require a certain size hole and a depth of box, and those dimensions are I don't have available, but they are available online and through different bird resources. You can find those out. But if you want to make a kestrel box, they do very well in them, and you could put that up on your pole and probably attract the birds.
All right. How high up would a, you'd have to go up a ways, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you don't want it so low that you can reach it. It'd probably be up higher than that. They like to get a little vantage point, and so the exact height, I can't tell you that either, but it's probably over 10 feet, I would say.
Thank you very much.
All right. You're welcome. Thanks a lot for calling. And then put something around the, toward the bottoms to keep the, at least keep the raccoons from climbing up the pole. That I think that's an important thing to consider,
too.
It
is for any nest, yeah.
Beth in Waukesha, we're on to you now. Hi, Beth. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been a birder for, at least 15 years and thought I was doing quite well, but there was one bird that always eluded me, and that was the pileated woodpecker.
Mm-hmm.
I had been to parks such as, I think it's Wyalusing, where I could hear them in the woods. I was with people who were more experienced than I was, but I never could see one. Last year in Door County, near Peninsula State Park, we were starting out on a bike ride, and I saw a flash of something black and white flying, and I looked on the ground, and here was this beautiful pileated woodpecker pecking away at the base of a tree, and it wasn't any more than 6 or 8 or 10 feet from Highway 42. And I'm wondering, how unusual was it to see this elusive bird in such a public place with cars going by and people and stuff?
Well, first of all, Beth, congratulations on your first pileated woodpecker. I wish you many more.
It was quite exciting.
Yes, mm-hmm. It is. Woodpeckers are one of those birds that they kind of decide when they're going to show up. They come and they go. They're not one of the most predictable of birds at any time. Pileated woodpeckers are big birds, but they like to stick to tall timber, and so you may see one fly across a highway or, you know, in a distance going across the landscape, but they hide behind the thick timber, and so you don't see them all that often, but when you do, they sure do make an impression, don't they?
Yeah.
Right.
And at Peninsula State Park, I know there are pileated woodpeckers there. We've actually photographed, my wife and I and daughter photographed a mom and a dad and two young ones right in the park. So they're quite used to in there. To the kids, at least, were the young were weren't too skittish at all. Mom and dad stayed away a little bit, but we saw four of them in Peninsula State Park. So
wow, that's good.
Yeah,
I was just amazed, first of all, to see it on the ground, and secondly, that it was so close to the highway. I thought they kind of like to hide out in the woods.
Yeah.
That's not a survival ethic that's good for any bird hanging out by the roadside.
No, that's for sure. Thanks, Beth.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. And let's turn to Bruce next. Bruce, hello to you.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
My wife is a birder in a sense, and got an anniversary coming up, and I'd like to buy her a really decent set of bird watching binoculars. I've done a little checking online, but like, what would be the power you should look for, and the optics, or you tell them my question. I really don't know that much about it, but I'd like to get her something that she'd really use and enjoy. Maybe some recommendations would be great.
Probably not something that is overly heavy or weighty.
That's right.
Yeah, I wouldn't want it to be too heavy, but, you know, cost is no object for this woman.
Okay.
Well, if you say that, be careful what you say, because there are optics, there are binoculars out there that go for over $1,000. If that's what
that's
you mean, then maybe she'll ask
this woman.
But you can get a good pair for around $300 to $500 that are just fine for every purpose. But, you know, buying a binocular is like buying a purse. And, you might not buy a purse for your wife because she has her own choice. And binoculars are the same way. A person needs to feel them in their hand and try them on and see how they fit to their eyes. And so my first advice is take her shopping with you. Don't surprise her with them.
Okay.
Take her shopping with you. And then if you can find a good pair for 8-power, that's the going thing. 8-power gives you a little more power, and then you want to make sure that maybe it's an 8x42 or something like that. That's a very popular size and mix for binoculars today. So if you go down to Madison, Eagle Optics in Middleton, on the west side of Madison, is a very good place to go binocular shopping. You can go right in the store. They're very helpful. So plan a trip down to Madison and take her to Eagle Optics.
Yeah, it's a great place.
Okay.
All right. Well, you're breaking up on us, Bruce, but thank you very much for calling. You know, he sounds like a pretty good husband. He said, money is no object when it comes to my wife.
Yeah. I was tempted to ask if his wife is a lister, but I figure that's her business.
Okay. You can join in, too, by the way, with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send us shoot us an email at talk@WPR.org. And we have an email from Dennis in Janesville who wants you to please talk about the starling. It seems they're multiplying, maybe out of control. My grandmother used to encourage me to shoot them on the farm because she claimed they ate other birds' eggs. Is there such a thing as a bad bird?
Wow, that's have you got another show? you know, the arguments about starlings and house sparrows run rampant, even amongst bird watchers who profess their love for birds. There's, you know, it's funny. I've written articles on these birds. I call them the birds we love to hate, the house sparrow, the rock pigeon, the European starling. You know, the European starling has been with us for 150 years or more.
Yeah.
And you can consider it as much a part of the American landscape as the American robin now. It may have originated from Europe, but now it's one of our birds, and there's no eradicating it. It's here. I don't see any possible course other than to say, well, you know, you might not like it. Its song isn't the prettiest. And yes, it is aggressive towards other birds, but I don't know what you can do. And I can't promote shooting them as your grandmother perhaps did. You know, so you have to kind of live and let live, I think. Sometimes they pester bluebird houses or purple martin houses, and because they are aggressive and they have a very sharp beak and they're very good at using it. But they are a genius all their own, as are any birds. Starlings have been taught to speak. They're very intelligent as far as bird brains go. And so they're an amazing bird into themselves. And so I think that there's a certain amount of respect and appreciation that one must have for even a bird like a starling.
Yeah. And thanks very much for that email. Again, you could email us at talk@WPR.org or call in at 800-642-1234. But there's another number we'll want to be giving you as well, the one that you can call in with your contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio. Your contribution makes our work here at Wisconsin Public Radio possible, and it's easy to make your donation. Just go online to WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552. Jim Packer joining me again. Jim, how are we doing on that goal?
Well, our goal is $9,000 to raise by 12:30, so we've got 55 minutes to do this, and we've got $8,300 yet to raise. Wisconsin Public Radio is listener-supported, and your pledge helps make this program possible. So contribute right now. You can do that securely online at WPR.org, or you can call us toll-free at 888-202-2552.
You know, you can enjoy this program every day of the week, every weekday at least. And maybe you also enjoy, oh, I don't know, Zorba Pastor on Your Health or Car Talk or What Do You Know with Jim Packard, featuring Jim Packard as one of and Michael Feldman. Or Wait, Don't Tell Me. I kind of like that one, too. Or Prairie Home Companion. We listen to that pretty much every week. Those are all weekend shows. We've got something for you every darn day of the week, and weekends are extra fun as well. So your pledge right now supports all the programs you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio. It's easy to donate. Just go online at WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552. And Jim, what a great incentive we've got today for those who contribute.
That's right. As an added incentive for your good deed in your pledge, either online or by phone, we've got a special thank you gift this hour. Donate $120 or more, and you'll receive the book, All of This in Robins 2, by Steve Bechkel. It is a great book which contains very personal, very informative, very humorous information about going birding. Steve is serious about this, but he's written a book that really...
entertaining.
It is very entertaining, and it also has a lot of concrete information about the specific sites in Wisconsin to find the most birds. So why not give us a call with your pledge and help us meet our goal of $9,000. $120 or more will get you the book, All of This in Robins 2, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And he has some very nice diagrams and maps showing exactly where to drive and where to go in these particular areas. So that's one of the great incentives that we have for you today. And wait, Jim, I hear the Italian music in the background.
Yes, you do, Larry. It's Larry's Little Italy.
I'll tell you what.
If the gondola's rocking, don't come knocking.
Unless you have contributed $1,200 to Wisconsin Public Radio during this program, we'll invite you and a guest to join us on June 27th for Festa Monona at Larry's Little Italy, right on the shores of Lake Monona in Madison. It's June 27th. We'll have a delicious meal prepared by Patrick O'Halloran of Lombardino's Italian Restaurant. Weather permitting, there will be boat rides in Larry's gondola on Lake Monona, and we'll have a wonderful dinner, a great meal, chicken panzanella, wood-grilled beef tenderloin, a couple of the items, a buttermilk panna cotta for dessert. I tell you what, it's going to be a wonderful time. And the fun part of it is I'll be there, Joy will be there, will be other listeners to Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard's going to be there. Cheryl Gasser will be there. Scott and Candy Craven. We're going to have some wonderful gifts that we'll be handing out. We'll have a lot of fun. And all yours for a $1,200 contribution. We only have 8 pairs left. There are only 8 pairs of tickets. So if you've been thinking about that, don't think any longer. Just go ahead and contribute $1,200, and we'll get you on that list, and you'll be invited to Festa Monona. But maybe you'd rather say, well, I can't make it on the 27th, but I can contribute $120 or maybe $250. If you can do that, we'll send you a copy of Steve's book, and you'll get the member benefit card. Call us at 888-202-2552 or go online to WPR.org.
You know, new members are so important to Wisconsin Public Radio. The more people who support WPR, the more stable our financial situation, and the better that we're able to withstand economic ups and downs. So if you have never contributed before, know that your new membership will help keep Wisconsin Public Radio the same strong, reliable service that you depend on. So become a member of WPR with a pledge of $120 or any amount that's comfortable for you today at WPR.org or toll-free at 888-202-2552.
We need to make that $9,000 goal. Help us out. And we'll take some more calls now as we visit with Steve Bechtgal about birds and birding here in Wisconsin. Join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. And we've got Jim in Hanover, Illinois, waiting online here. So let's go to Jim. Jim, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
You bet.
Well, I had a question for your guest, really about neighbor management. And it involves this a raptor that has been entering our yard the last couple of weeks. What's either a pretty large female sharpshinder or maybe a small male Cooper's. I'm not able to make a definite identification, but it's a really lovely, beautiful bird with her blazing orange eyes. And she kind of hangs out in the yard and, you know, disturbs the other birds for a little bit, and then she goes off somewhere else. But about once or twice a week, she'll pick off one of our astonishing population of cowbirds, which we have, which are just marauding our neighborhood. I'd never seen so many before. So I'm kind of an equal opportunity feeder. I put seed out for everybody, and, you know, if the hawk wants to come by and pick off one of the birds, that's just part of the feeding process. And we have great neighbors who all feed the birds, too, but one of them's pretty aggressive. And he has shot hawks in the past because he doesn't like anybody, you know, infringing on his birds, eating his seed. And but he's a great neighbor, but he does this. And so I would like him not to shoot this hawk. Any advice on how to present the matter to a neighbor without offending them? Because, like I say, we've lucked into some really great neighbors, and I don't want to really irk anybody too much. I'll take my answer from the radio.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Well, that's a sticky situation. Number one, it's illegal what he's doing. I'm pretty sure, Steve.
Yes, it is illegal. Of course, if that's not enough to scare him, and that's not being neighborly to tell him that, there are some creative approaches. One would be to find a giant hawk costume and swamp him the next time he comes out the door. That would probably teach him a lesson, and he might laugh at that one. But seriously, I like your balance of your attitude. Yeah, people have different sentiments about raptors coming to their feeder. You know, I suppose there are ways to be protective of this. The bird will leave. It won't stay around. It's probably not going to breed in the area, but you know, I don't know how you can convince someone not to take a pop at it. That's a tough challenge.
I'm not sure either. I mean, other than to say, boy, you could get caught, and there's a pretty stiff fine for that, and you lose your gun and everything else. Maybe that's the way to go. Maybe somebody who's listening has even a better idea. We'll find out. Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org.
One other thing I want to add there, Larry, is that cowbirds, of course, are one of those birds that we love to hate. And so you might try convincing your neighbor that the hawk is eating the cowbirds that are preying upon some of the young nestlings, parasitizing the nests of some of the more desirable birds, and that he might then see some of the balance in this issue, too.
Oh, that is a very good point. Well, let's turn to Steve in Sun Prairie next. Steve, hi to you.
Hey, good morning. I have a question that I think is going to be much easier to answer, at least more pleasant to answer than the last one.
Okay.
I live just to the north of Sun Prairie, a couple of miles, and it used to be when I went out to mow my lawn, the swallows would come around, and I just love swallows. They're the prettiest little birds, and watch them swoop around and stuff. Well, there's been a lot of building in the area, and I don't see swallows anymore. I'm wondering if there's any way I can lure swallows to nest anywhere in my house.
Well, tree swallows do respond well to nest boxes. They sometimes share them with bluebirds. But there you'd need some habitat. You'd need enough space in your yard where, first of all, the birds would have to be moving around anyways, picking off insects, where they'd notice the nest boxes and feel that that was an appropriate nesting habitat. If you're really boxed in by houses, that probably wouldn't work.
No, I'm actually not. I live on County Trunk Inn, and across the highway from me is a little tiny cemetery and a cornfield, and it's all rural that way, and then to the north. Pretty much.
You went either way. If you put up the house dimensions for bluebirds and tree swallows are pretty close, if not exact.
Okay.
And I think that you either tracked bluebirds or tree swallows, you went either way. So.
Okay, and I could get those dimensions online, do you think?
Yeah, you can get them online. The Audubon Encyclopedia, Bird Encyclopedia has them. A lot of other bird resources have them, but yeah, you can track them down online, I'm sure. Or send me an email at gonebirding88@hotmail.com, and I can help you find them, too.
Okay, well, I appreciate your help. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Thanks a lot for calling. Well, Matt in Hayward has a question or comment. Hi, Matt.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Hey, I'm trying to find the identity of a hummingbird. They haven't been around for about 2 years now, but I can't find them in any bird book. I can't find them there, even from western states or anything. But the hummingbird I'm talking about is he's almost black in color. He's got I believe it'd be the.
Oh, we're losing you.
Oh. Hello?
Hi, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, so you've got a hummingbird that's almost all black?
Yeah, and he's kind of got a red throat. His head is more oblong, and the beak on him seemed to be longer than I guess it would be the common one we have around here.
The ruby-throated?
Uh-huh. I've looked in all the books, and I can't identify him.
What do you think, Steve?
Do you have a picture of him by any chance?
No, I don't. I haven't seen him. They were around for about 2 to 3 years, and then they were gone. Everybody around me, nobody knows what I'm talking about, and I have shown them to other people.
Yeah. There are some rare hummingbirds that show up. I found out from a friend in Menominee that he had what was called a green-violet ear coming to his feeder in Menominee from July until October. And at first I didn't believe him until he showed me the pictures, and he did have pictures of it that made it easier to identify. But that's a bird from Mexico, and it was only the second record in Wisconsin for that bird. So you may have some rarity. It's hard to say what you have without more specific details. I guess unless you try a few more bird guides or get a picture, it'll be hard to pin it down.
Okay.
Well, send us a picture if you get one, Matt. We'll make sure, or send it. What's your address again, Steve, your email?
It's gonebirding88@hotmail.com, and I would certainly entertain any birding questions should anybody have one. But, if you ever get a picture of a hummingbird or a bird that you need identification, I'd be glad to help. In fact, WhisperedNet, the chat room for all the people that are bird watchers in Wisconsin, does this frequently. You submit a picture, people are glad to help you out with identification problems.
Well, I'd appreciate that. This thing's been driving me crazy for a while.
All right. Well, good luck with that, Matt. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Brad in Oshkosh got a suggestion for us. Brad, hi to you.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good.
thanks for taking my call. Hey, I just had a suggestion for that caller that was that has a problem with a neighbor wanting to shoot hawks or birds in his backyard.
Yeah.
I've learned birding has been in my life since I'm 30, and I've been watching birds since I was 5. My grandmother was big into watching hummingbirds. She tried to put food out in her yard for every kind of bird that was out there. And a lot of times this is all that some people have for pets are the wild birds that are in their backyard that they get to feed and watch. And I guess the way I would put it to his neighbor is, if your dog were running around in my backyard, you feed your dog, you watch your dog. If your dog were running in my backyard, would you like it if I shot your dog? Because, I mean, this is what a lot of people spend their time sometimes during the day doing is watching birds. And they get great enjoyment out of it. And I am a bird watcher. I also hunt birds, and that's all I hunt. I don't hunt deer or anything like that. And it's kind of a shame to know that a fellow hunter would be out there wanting to basically create more problems than we already have with the hunting system already. It's kind of sad that you have to almost deal with that all the time.
Yeah.
You go city, country, but I figured that suggestion might work for him a little easier.
Well, thanks a lot for calling, Brad. What do you think, Steve?
Yes, I think that could help, too. I wonder if, maybe naming the hawk would help because, of course, it's harder to shoot at something if we know it personally. So maybe he should give it Henrietta the hawk or something, and then once you associate it as something more personal, it'd be harder to shoot at.
Yeah. Chris in Columbus, hi to you.
Hi. Great topic. Love the show. Had an experience. I have a bull hunting stand that has a great collection of cardinals around, and this year I saw a cardinal that was at least a shade and a half, two shades redder than the other male cardinals around. I would like you to discuss cardinal shading a little bit. And then on the farm, is there, I don't put out bird feed, but I would like to because we do have a collection, but I'm so pested with the sparrows nesting in every eave of every building. What feed can I put out that won't attract the sparrows?
Well, there is an answer to that. An easier
is there?
Answer than you think. House sparrows love millet. And so if you have a mixed seed, it's a lot more attractive to house sparrows. Now, I've found that just putting out black sunflower, I hardly ever see house sparrows coming to eat it. I get chickadees and cardinals that eat that, but house sparrows don't seem to care so much for the black sunflower. But if you mix seed, you have corn in there, that attracts, of course, squirrels, and the millet really does attract the house sparrows. So that is one option. As far as the cardinal shading, most bird plumage is affected by diet, but without doing some research, I couldn't tell you what a cardinal would be eating to make their plumage more red. If it is true that the bird is a deeper red, I say enjoy it. It's got to be a brilliant experience. But, maybe I got to research that a little bit more and get an answer for you.
Yeah, we'll do that. Steve Betchkal, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. So happy to have you with us here as we talk with Steve Betchkal about birds and birding and about his book, All of This and Robins Too, A Guide to the 50 or So Best Places to Find Birds in Wisconsin. Jim Packard joining me. And, Jim, we've got got a goal this hour. What's our goal and how are we doing?
Our goal is $9,000 to raise by 12:30, and we have $7,725 yet to raise. Wisconsin Public Radio is listener-supported, so your pledge helps make this program possible, and we're asking you to contribute right now securely online at WPR.org or toll-free at 888-202-2552.
That's the number to call. I tell you what, Steve Betchkal is a great guest. We've had a lot of fun with him today. He knows a lot. And this is the caliber of guest I think you hear every day on Wisconsin Public Radio. So what's it worth to you to have access to a guest like this and his great information? Think about it and then make your pledge online at WPR.org, or call toll-free at 888-202-2552 with a big goal to go. We've got some incentives for you. And, Jim, let's talk about those incentives for a bit.
Well, when you donate $120 or more, you'll receive this book, All of This and Robins 2, by Steve Betchkal. And also, that $120 pledge will entitle you to the member benefit card of Wisconsin Public Radio, in which you can certainly recoup the amount of your investment by going for two-for-one dinners or two-for-one nights at selected Wisconsin bed and breakfasts, some reduced prices on amusements and attractions around the state, cultural attractions. And so it's a chance for you to make an investment, make a pledge, and then recoup the amount over the next year, and really help us out to continue the programs that you enjoy on Wisconsin Public Radio. So go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And, you know, most of us go through that exercise of tightening our budgets from time to time. Renee and I sat down, and we're doing that ourselves the other night. We decide what to live without based on cost and value. And when it comes to deciding whether to give to Wisconsin Public Radio this year, you might want to consider both cost and value. The cost is easy because you set the amount of your gift, of course. And the value, that's, I think, easy, too. Just add up the hours you listen every week. Maybe it's 10 or 12 or 14 hours a week. You know, that's 500 or 600 or 700 hours a year when you get right down to it. So when you consider the amount you can afford to give in relation to how often you listen, I think Wisconsin Public Radio becomes a really great value. So think about it, then make a gift online at WPR.org or call us toll free at 888-202-2552.
Larry, I was pleasantly surprised to find out that at least 30 people have either renewed or have taken out a $1,000 membership and a gift to Wisconsin Public Radio during the drive so far. And of that, I believe that about 12 of those were brand new, including someone who pledged $35 last year, up that to $1,000 this year. So it does show you that some people can afford it, and if you can afford it, why not consider a generous leadership contribution of $83 a month, $1,000 over a year's time. It'll help us bring WPR programming to those who cannot afford to give. And if you bump that up by $200 to $1,200, you'll be in Larry's Little Italy on June 27th, a Saturday afternoon on Lake Monona, and that'll be the Festa Monona at Larry's house, where Patrick O'Halloran and his staff will be preparing a delightful Italian meal. We'll have Italian music.
Oh, it's going to be great.
The gondola will be rocking. There'll be music, as I say. I'm sure there'll be some libation.
Oh, yes.
For the occasion. And
pretty sure there'll be some fine wines from Wallersheim. I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
And everybody who comes, each of the couples who comes, will receive a copy of Jeff Richter's book about albino deer in Wisconsin.
Beautiful photography.
It is. He's been exceptional in being able to find and photograph albino deer in the northern part of the state. And so that book is just a little additional gift that we will provide to you on that afternoon of June 27th. Takes a $1,200 pledge for a pair of you to come to Larry's house.
And that's at 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552. Or by going online to WPR.org. We have not, we've got 8 pairs left, so there's not a lot left. And I hope you'll, if you've been thinking about it, now would be a good time to act with that $1,200 contribution. But if you say, well, I can't do that right now, but how about a $120 contribution? Or maybe a $250 contribution would work for you. And you can join some of the other folks who have contributed. Nathan and Nan and Barron loves listening every day. Nan says, I'm a home care nurse, and the Wisconsin Public Radio programs get me through the day. And Bruce and Judy in Duluth, Minnesota, listen daily. Great source of news and discussion. Raymond in Cornucopia has been a longtime listener, enjoys the program. Tom in Thief River Falls, Minnesota, listens to Wisconsin Public Radio on the internet and has been doing that for a decade and decided it was time to contribute. And Christine in Madison says she loves
Larry Mueller. Yes, I knew she was going to. She calls there each year to say that she loves Larry. But listening on the internet is something that has been really growing, and it's a service that's paid for with your contribution. So, again, it shows you the value of your contribution in helping us make our goal of $9,000 for the program. And you can do that at WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552.
A $120 contribution brings you a copy of Steve Bechtold's book, All of This and Robins Too, a guide to the 50 or so best places to find birds in Wisconsin. It's a wonderful book. You're going to enjoy the writing in it. Steve's a great writer. He's got the top 10 reasons why you ought to be a bird, a birder in Wisconsin on the cover. One of them, let me give you one here. Let's see. Birds go better with Kringle and Leinenkugels. That's true, you know.
That's right. Well, he's from that part of the world, Eau Claire, which is not that far from Chippewa Falls, where he's going to know that Leinenkugels is the beer of choice there. And certainly with some good Kringle from Racine, why, you've got quite a combination to be out birding on the morning. He does a great description of going down to Milwaukee to Bradford Beach and birding down there, and talks about what a wonderful utopia it is to have this in the midst of a city. So it's just one of the locations of the 100 that he provides in the book, All of This and Robins Too, a guide to the 50 or so, but there's many more than that. Best places to find birds in Wisconsin.
Call at 888-202-2552 or go online to WPR.org. We're talking birds and birding in Wisconsin right now with Steve Bechtold of Eau Claire, Wisconsin, world-renowned birder, and also the author of All of This and Robins Too, a guide to the 50 or so best places to find birds in Wisconsin. Really happy to have him along. Give us a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. And Steve, we have Kathy from Green Bay online, so I want to go right to Kathy. Kathy, hello. Thank you for waiting.
Okay. I saw a bird that the best way I can describe it was huge, like the size of an owl, and it had a white breast, and the wings were kind of a brownish with a hint of gray in it, and the head was like an eagle. I have never seen anything like that, but it's a beautiful bird.
Well, Steve, what do you think?
Well, you've got some kind of raptor, it sounds like, a bird of prey. Did you see this near water? Did you see it in the woods?
I live on the east side, and I looked out my window, and it's sitting on a pine tree. And I thought to myself, how is that tree going to hold that big bird like that? It was there for about maybe 5 minutes and then gone.
Uh-huh.
And right in Green Bay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, eagles are not all that common in the east side of the state where you live, and especially not in Green Bay proper, but it could have been an immature eagle. I would guess you probably had a buteo, one of these soaring hawks, or maybe a Cooper's hawk. But again, without a picture, did you take a picture of it?
No, it was. I was just stunned by it, and then it was gone before I realized.
Oh, yeah.
It
was the way it usually works.
Yeah. To see them so close, they're beautiful birds. Well, if you get a chance to get a picture, Kathy, send it in, and we'll get it identified.
All right.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Greg in Johnson Creek, we'll go to you next. Hi, Greg.
Hello there. I'm just west of St. Paul this morning, coming out of St. Paul, and it was kind of a medium-sized, flat, brown, dark brown hawk flying like from light pole to light pole, and then as I got past it and looked in my mirror, it looked like maybe it was landing on another one. Would it be mating season for?
It was landing on another light pole or on another hawk?
It looked like another hawk sitting on the light there, kind of tucked up, and it landed on her back or its back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is definitely mating season. If you look, you'll see pairs of hawks. As you drive along the interstate, you'll see pairs of red-tailed hawks. And interestingly, the female of birds of prey is bigger than the male. So whether you're talking about a red-tailed hawk or a bald eagle, when they're sitting together, you can tell which one is the female and which one is the male by, you know, the little guy is the male. And so, yeah, they are not only mating, but they're actually in the process of nest building. And some birds, as I said before, are laying eggs. So.
All right.
These were solid. This one was kind of a solid brown. I mean, its back and belly were all the same color, kind of a flat, I guess for lack of a better description, shoe leather brown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are darker phases of birds. It doesn't sound like the plumage of a red-tailed hawk. It could have been a dark phase, rough-legged hawk. But hawks are such a complex bird to identify. People spend a lot of their lives trying to differentiate between a sharp-shinned or a Cooper's hawk or one type of rough-legged from an immature red-tailed that I would be just hazarding a guess as to what your species is without getting a look at it.
All right. Thanks, Greg. Thank you for calling. And Dana emailed and said she spotted a one-legged female downy woodpecker hanging upside down by her one leg feeding on suet. Hadn't spotted her for many weeks. It was afraid that she had not made it through the winter, but she did. How common is it for a one-legged bird to survive and thrive like this? She perches on branches and the sides of trees.
Well, that's a courageous bird, but it is a tenacious bird to be able to do that. But, you know, a woodpecker, you think because it has to grip wood, that would really be a detriment. You know, if you're hanging upside down from a trunk or if you're trying to cling to the bark while you're pecking at wood, part of the woodpecker strategy is it has two toes forward and two toes back so it can brace itself, and that's because it has to hammer away at that wood. So a one-legged woodpecker is, you know, akin to saying a pelican without a beak to catch fish. I mean, it's a real disadvantage. So, yeah, that's amazing. And it probably is not a bird that has strong odds of surviving, especially in competition. Getting enough to eat and avoiding birds of prey or anything like that.
Yeah, so it's a pretty strong bird. Tom in Wausau, we'll go to you next. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I got a question about identification of a bird. I see them on the road when I'm traveling in northern Wisconsin, flocks of 10, 12, grayish bird, silver with a white bottom, white I'll say underwing. I believe they're an Arctic bird that migrates south to, you know, in the winter and then leaves in the spring. But I haven't been able to find an identification of it. They tend to, when they flock, when they fly, you'll see flashes of white from the underwings.
Well, you know, Tom, we haven't done very well with bird detective today, but we're going to nail this one. This is a snow bunting. If you look up snow bunting in your guide, okay, you will see a picture of it. Have you tried that one?
No, but I will check that one out.
That's that is a bird that comes south in the winter and habits the fields, open country this would be?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you go to page 506 of Sibley, there's a picture of a snow bunting, but the birds have those big white flashes in their wings, and it makes them very identifiable. You'll see flocks of them flying around egg fields.
Okay. The comment I had was a brief story about a pileated woodpecker. We were a half mile from the base of the north side of Rib Mountain, Granite Peak ski area, and we have a pileated woodpecker that comes in through a light, actually a power pole, and he picks on the metal brace for the ground wire at the top of the pole. And he comes in and he raps on that pole. I believe he thinks that there's grubs or worms in the pole itself from the vibration through the wire.
Well, now what you're observing is a behavior that's actually one of the territorial behaviors of woodpeckers is to drum on objects. They love it when their drumming reverberates, and so they're advertising their presence. It's human-made things like metal. Siding, things like that are fantastic advantages for a woodpecker. Instead of just drumming on wood, they can actually make that sound carry farther and advertise it to the female. So what that woodpecker may indeed be doing is advertising its dominant capabilities to other females in the area.
Huh. Yeah. Thanks, Tom. Yeah, thanks for calling. 800-642-1234, the number to call for your question. Sarah and Nina wants to see warblers this spring. Where should she start looking for warblers?
You live in Neenah.
Yes, she lives in Neenah.
All right. There's a lot of nice natural habitat around there. I think that not far from you, I would suggest the Mead Wildlife Area, because that is good for all kinds of birds. And not only in the peak migration period of May would you get warblers in some of the forested corridors there, but you get waterfowl and a lot of wetland birds. And then there's also some grassland. But if you go along the Wisconsin River into, Wood County, Adams County, there are all kinds of places, parks. Anywhere along the big rivers, you will find migration corridors of warblers. I like to joke that the best place to find warblers is any place you can find 27 or 25 species of birds in a day. And that happens quite a bit when the fallout is right. But I think that you have to kind of try your spot in the woods and try a trail somewhere and find a likely spot, and then hang out for the right day when the birds are moving through due to weather systems or the migration timetable, and you'll have some success.
And another email from Ilse, who said had a comment about the person who might have been harming a raptor. She says, as you know, killing or harming a migratory bird is a violation of federal law and carries a healthy fine. $10,000 comes to mind, along with a one-year jail sentence. So that should be enough to dissuade anybody. Then she has a comment about birdhouses for swallows. If putting up nest boxes for swallows and or bluebirds, if the houses are placed within large distances between them, they will all probably have just tree swallows. If you put two boxes near each other within 10 feet, you can get both bluebirds and swallows, and swallows will not nest that close to each other.
Yeah, that's a great tip.
Yep, great point. Robert in rural Wisconsin, we'll go to you. Hi, Robert.
Hi, good morning. We have a bed and breakfast that's part of the WBBA that's just south of Wapaka, and we've got an awful lot of birds, including all the woodpeckers except red-headed woodpeckers. I've never seen one since I've been back in Wisconsin, and I was wondering if they...
They're getting rarer in Wisconsin, aren't they, Steve?
Yeah, red-headed woodpeckers are in decline in Wisconsin. There's a couple reasons for that. One is because people don't leave dead snags sitting in pasture land in oak savanna any longer. They cut it down for firewood, or they cut it down to get rid of it. The other is that they are a bird that tends to fly low across highways, and so you'll find a lot of roadkill red-headed woodpeckers. They're not doing so well, but this winter has been particularly good for red-headed woodpeckers, not in the Wapaka area. They have been spotted on Christmas bird counts and other places more often than usual in the
good.
Winter.
That's good. Well, that's good to hear. Robert, thank you for calling. Marianne in Dubuque, Iowa, your turn. Hi, Marianne.
Hi, a great show. Very interesting topic.
Thanks.
I have a quick question about goldfinches. We have, over the years, I've put about 5 thistle feeders out, and oftentimes, especially during the summer, they'll just be covered with goldfinches. But I would say the last 6 months or so, I've seen a real decline in the population, in my area at least. Do you know of any population changes as far as goldfinches go?
No. Goldfinches themselves haven't shown, as far as I know, any kind of fluctuation in population. Could it be your food source? Is there any chance that a couple things happen? One is if there is a hawk hanging around, sometimes that chases the birds away. They won't show up if there's a hawk in the neighborhood. Another is sometimes seed goes bad, and if you have bad seed, if it has mold in it or if it isn't fresh, sometimes that's bad for the birds. Maybe it's time to just clean the feeder out and put some new fresh seed in there. But the goldfinches themselves are still common, and they're probably somewhere around.
All right. Thanks, Marianne. Ron and Clinton, your turn. Hi, Ron.
Hi. We put a pond in our place. We had a little farmette about 5 years ago and stocked it with some fish, some koi and goldfish. And this past summer, a blue heron found us. Mm-hmm. And has been eating our fish. Is there any way that a beautiful bird, absolutely gorgeous, it's getting very expensive keeping that pond stacked with fish.
Yeah.
Well, that one is the...
A heron feeder you've got there.
Yeah. Boy, I don't know. Once a bird learns that, it's an easy food supply. Usually, let me think about this one, because a heron, does he land in the pond or does he wade in?
He lands next to the pond and then wades in.
Maybe fencing it in more closely would keep him from wading in, because I would doubt that a heron would drop over your fence directly into the water. Their tendency is to wade in, And so maybe you could discourage him from dropping over the fence, at least deterring his behavior. That'd be an interesting experiment anyway.
Yeah, and if you put a large fence, you might have to put it up for a while, but if once he's gone, maybe you'd be able to then take it back down again and hope he doesn't come back. There are trout rearing commercial fisheries that actually cover their ponds to keep herons out. So I thank you very much for calling. And, Steve, you have another list. You've got the top 10 reasons to give generously to Wisconsin Public Radio. What about that list?
Of course, being a lister, I compose all kinds of lists, and I just thought I'd help you out with this one, Larry. But here are my top 10 reasons why you should give generously. Number 10, Larry Mueller himself. If you're listening right now, you're already hip to how informative and entertaining this show is, and that's obvious to you. But reason number 9, if there were no public radio, we'd have only commercial radio. And that means a pledge drive every ad break. Mm-hmm. Reason number 8, public radio and you go together like goat suckers and rictal bristles. Explain later. Reason number 7, God gave you 2 good ears. Somebody should be talking at them. Reason number 6, whoever coined the phrase, the best things in life are free, wasn't taking into account junk mail, secondhand smoke, and copyright infringement. Reason number 5, holidays spent talking birds with Noel Cutright and Bill Volkert. Noel, if you're out there, you got to answer that guy's super red cardinal question. Reason number 4, if you didn't give it to public radio, you just gamble it all away on your child's college education anyway. Reason number 3, it feels way better than it did bailing out those big corporations. Reason number 2, you can't take it with you. But why is that? Aren't suitcases allowed in the afterlife? And reason number 1, I certainly don't mean to promulgate pandemonium with this one, but if you don't contribute, a mob of yellow-bellied sapsuckers will descend upon you and your fledglings. Far, far better for all involved to simply shell out the dough.
Oh, that's a great list. And let me give the number right now. If any of those points on the list mean something to you, I hope you'll contribute at 888-202-2552. 888-202-2552. Or go online to WPR.org. And Jim Packer joins us as well. And Jim, we're running a little behind, but we can still make our goal.
We can still make the goal, which is $9,000, and we've got to do it in the next 8 minutes or so. And so you can go ahead and make your pledge right now at WPR.org, or you can call us at 888-202-2552. Meeting the goal will help make this program possible in the months to come. Your contribution of $120, for instance, will help us get there. So make your pledge now online at WPR.org or toll-free at 888-202-2552.
You know, you think about the guests that we have on the program. David Knutson of Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College in Ashland has got advice on cooking. Bassam Shakashiri, a professor in the UW-Madison Chemistry Department, talks about science and education. Phil Pelletieri, our entomologist. Melinda Myers, a nationally known garden expert. You get some great information you can use from these guests and so many others that we have on the program. It's really a pleasure to have guests like Steve Bechtol and some of the guests that I just mentioned, or all of the guests I just mentioned for that matter. But it's your contribution that makes it possible. So go online at WPR.org or call us toll-free at 888-202-2552 and make your pledge of support. And we do have some nice incentives as well.
That's right. As an added incentive for your good deed, we have a special thank you gift this hour. Donate $120 or more, you'll receive the book All of This in Robbins 2 by Steve Bechtol. And you'll also receive the member benefit card, which will enable you to recoup the amount of your investment over the next year. So give right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And if you can afford a contribution of $1,200, we'll be more than happy to invite you to Festa Monona on the afternoon of June 27th. Jim Packard, Cheryl Gasser, Joy Cardine will all be there, as obviously me. It's at my home. Did a little remodeling once again. There's more paint on the house and the inside, and things look pretty nice there. And we'll have a delicious meal prepared by Patrick O'Halloran of Lombardino's Italian restaurant, weather permitting, some boat rides. And tell you what, we're limited to 15 pair. I think we've gone through about half of them. We've got about 8 left. When you donate $100 a month or $1,200, you'll be supporting the great programming you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio each day. And this event is a special thank you gift to you and your guest. And of course, a pledge of any amount makes you a member of Wisconsin Public Radio and is much appreciated. But if you've been thinking about that cookout, give us a call now at 888-202-2552 or go online to WPR.org. We'd love to hear from you.
You know, when you support WPR, you are supporting the Wisconsin idea, which is to bring the resources of the university to the entire state. Not every state has such an idea. Not every state has such a quality public radio network as Wisconsin Public Radio. It's one of the great things about Wisconsin. You enjoy WPR, something to take pride in, so why not join forces with many other Wisconsinites right now and make your contribution online at WPR.org or toll-free at 888-202-2552.
We have heard from Bill and Laura in Reedsburg, who listen to Wisconsin Public Radio every day and love the informative programs. David and Madison, both my parents and my wife's parents, have supported Wisconsin Public Radio for decades, and now I want to do it as well. Bert in Grays Lake, Illinois, says the best radio listening in Northern Illinois. We've got listeners in Northern Illinois, too. And I tell you what, lots of great calls here and lots of great comments from those who have contributed. We have about 9.5 hours of locally made call-in programs a day here on Wisconsin Public Radio. This is a unique radio service in the nation. Jim and I, we're on, 90 minutes a day for 250 shows a year. That's about 370 hours or thereabouts of programming from that 11 to 12:30 time slot. And we try to come up with programs and develop guests and programs who are going to be interesting for you and who will provide you with some great information. Maybe they'll help with identifying a bird, or maybe it's make you healthier, or maybe it's to help you with your house. Lots of great advice that we give on this program. I hope you'll support it now with a gift of any amount. $120 will send you a copy of Steve's book. But whatever the amount, call now at 888-202-2552 or go online to WPR.org and make your contribution.
Maybe you've never made a contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio before. Your gift does matter. At its heart, WPR is a grassroots organization. Yes, we get some money from federal and state government. And throughout the day, you can hear announcements of the many businesses that support Wisconsin Public Radio. But it's the contributions of $50 or $100 from listeners like you that add up to the most significant part of our budget. So why not make your first ever gift to Wisconsin Public Radio? It really does make a difference. You can go to our secure website at WPR.org, or you can call us toll-free at 888-202-2552.
And time is running out for your chance to get a copy of that book. But I tell you what, how many? We have about 40,000 members who support Wisconsin Public Radio, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct.
About 40,000 members. And there are, obviously, we have somewhere around 500,000 listeners, if I'm not mistaken, as well. So about 1 in 10, maybe, or so people contribute to Wisconsin Public Radio. If you've never contributed before, I hope you'll do it today. We've had 13 people who have never contributed before call in today with a contribution during this program. If you haven't contributed before, I hope you'll do it today. If you've been thinking about how much to contribute, well, I'll tell you what, whatever you think is right, $120, $250, maybe you want to join us at our picnic, $1,200, whatever the amount, I hope you'll do it right now and make your contribution, 888-202-2552 or online to WPR.org. Got about a minute and a half to go here.
So why not make your pledge right now during that minute and a half? And when you give $120 or more, you'll get the book All of This and Robbins Too by Steve Bechkel, which includes 10 things that you can do to help keep Wisconsin bird rich, including a plan for a bird rich future and don't accept less and give to get. And you'll find out about that. And 100 birdie things you should experience in Wisconsin before you die. He's not talking about the morbidity in that, but just the things that you need to do in order to make sure that you get your full measure of birding experience.
Call now, 888-202-2552, or go online to WPR.org. And thanks for listening and for pledging.